Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Out at the beautiful winter meetings, John Morosi, he of Fox and MLB Network. John, Joe, and Evan, how are you?
Joe and Evan, good morning. Of course, good afternoon where you are from beautiful San Diego. And yes, a very robust start to these meetings yesterday with Strasburg, and hopefully even more news to come.
All right, well, let's go right to it with Garrett Cole. And, of course, we know the Yankees are very interested, and they're ready to blow him out of the water. How do you see that playing out, John?
I think right now the most likely scenario is that Garrett Cole becomes a Yankee. Okay. The Yankees, to me, are not going to be outbid for him. They have the resources to do it. You think about his past personally. Of course, he grew up a Yankee fan. They really wanted him out of the draft. It didn't work out. He went to UCLA instead. And now they finally have a chance to make this happen. And it's going to cost them, certainly. The expectation right now in baseball is that he will reach that magical $300 million level that, of course, no pitcher has ever done. And the interesting part about the negotiation from my perspective is this. Steven Strasburg's contract pays him through the age of 37. Garrett Cole is 2 years younger than Steven Strasburg. So if Scott Boras says, and of course Scott also represents Strasburg and he represents Garrett Cole, if he says to teams, listen, I got Strasburg a deal through age 37. I want Cole to be paid through age 37 as well, that would make it a nine-year deal. 9 years. Now, that is an extraordinary length of contract for a pitcher. Of course, these are some pretty extraordinary times. I would never say never, but I do think that by getting to that at least mental construct for 9 years, Scott is therefore able to put some unique requests in there in terms of what the average annual value should be. Maybe it's a vesting option. And I do think if you went 8 years guaranteed with a ninth vesting option, that would be how you could potentially get it to $300 million in total guarantee.
And the Yankees are not scared off by any of this, because in the past we've heard they won't go this far with this guy. We're even hearing it now with Didi Gregorius. They're not prepared to go here with Didi. With Garrett Cole, they're prepared to go wherever the finish line takes them?
I'm sure that they have some upper bound at the end of the day, but I also believe this. The Yankees have to look at this in a multi-year overall perspective, because you've got Tanaka coming up on free agency after this coming season, along with Paxton. The Yankees cannot enter next winter needing to totally overhaul their rotation without an ace already in place. This actually, and this may sound a little funny, but I think it's true. If you have Cole in place now, it will, I think, allow you to have a better bargaining position both at the trade deadline this year and in free agency next year. It improves your leverage. If by next winter the Yankees don't have Cole and they have to go out and find a replacement or re-sign Tanaka or find a replacement and re-sign Paxton, they are going to be at a tremendous disadvantage. And it may, in fact, cost them more money simply because they have a very low level of leverage. I'm not going to say make one of these arguments that says, oh, Garrett Cole's going to pay for himself. No, he won't. He's going to be incredibly expensive. But it will be less uncomfortable, I believe, for Yankees ownership and Brian Cashman in a year if they already have Garrett Cole in place as their long-term ace and can then work from there and worry about the second and third spots in the rotation after that.
John, how about Anthony Rendon right now? What do you see him winding up?
I don't think that he'll be a Yankee. I think that there's enough interest in him elsewhere. There was a report today the Angels are now involved with Rendon. I think that could be a very logical spot for him to go if, in fact, the Yankees find a way to get Garrett Cole and the Angels are still without a guy to spend all that money on, so to speak. Although I think the Angels' primary need still has to be the rotation. They had the worst rotation ERA in the American League this year. And unless that changes, Mike Trout will continue to miss the playoffs every single season. The Angels have the worst record in the American League West over the last 4 years, and the reason for that, by and large, is not a lack of offense, but a lack of pitching. So I would say Rendon, while he's been linked to the Angels, Rendon makes a lot more sense for the Dodgers and the Rangers. I believe those are the two most likely destinations right now for Anthony Rendon.
Well, one other thing about just getting back to Cole real quick. We know the Yankees, we know the Angels, we know the Dodgers. John Heyman said recently there could be a mystery team, and I'm trying to figure out, like, who would that mystery team be? Maybe Texas, because they have a lot of money to spend. Is there any other team that could be lurking in the shadows for Gerrit Cole?
Well, I'd mention the Giants, and of course, his brother-in-law Brandon Crawford plays shortstop for the Giants. That'd be a nice family story for him to be able to play with family and have the whole family together in what is, of course, his home state of California. Of course, he's from Southern California, but even being in the Bay Area would put him closer to home. So that may be one club. Of course, but we know that they were willing to go to a pretty strong extent to get Bryce Harper a year ago and did not get him. So I'd mention that as one possibility, but to me, guys, you look at the situation. Gerrit Cole has got the team that plays 5 miles from where he went to high school in Orange County with the Angels involved. The Dodgers, the flagship franchise of the West Coast, they're involved. And the Yankees, his boyhood favorite team, is involved. You don't really need many more teams involved than what you've got right now. There may be a mystery team, sure, but I would be stupefied if a team besides the Dodgers, Angels, or Yankees landed Gerrit Cole.
All right, D.D. Gregorius, is he going to wind up with Girardi in Philadelphia?
Very strong chance. I think that the D.D. and the Phillies, it's a really good fit. Of course, he knows Girardi very well. The Phillies were somewhat frustrated by Gene Segura's defense at shortstop this past year. So bringing D.D. in would allow them to move Segura either to second or third. Of course, they have just, in the last week or so, cut ties with Michael Franco and Cesar Hernandez, their third baseman and second baseman, respectively, in recent years. So I think the fit is there, makes a lot of sense. I've heard the Reds as well as being a possible spot for Didi, of course, that was where he began his major league career all those years ago. But I think, in general, the Phillies are the team that I believe makes as much sense as anybody else right now, and really the Girardi connection just layers on top of that.
And as we see, the National League East is very active, and then we have the Mets, who have to get better. They had a nice close to their season, but they need to get better. What kind of rumblings are you hearing about what Brody's trying to do right now?
Well, it's interesting because they seem to be a little more stable and status quo than, to your point, they probably should be. They had a nice close to the season, but you have to think about it. Are you going to be able to beat the defending World Series champions? Are you going to be able to beat the two-time defending division champions in the Atlanta Braves? And right now, the NL East is the most competitive division, I believe, in all of Major League Baseball. I think it's a great division. The Mets are, I think, on the periphery of being able to be a competitive team from a standpoint of really competing for a wild card berth or potentially a division. I think they have to make some adjustments to the bullpen. In my opinion, they have to layer in one more really good setup guy or a co-closer, if you will, alongside of Diaz, and there's talk certainly what Lugo's role might be going forward. I would say for them, the likes of a Blake Treinen, maybe a good bounce-back candidate there, I think is someone that I would watch carefully, maybe even a Will Harris as well. I would say one of those big relievers that's out there, I think that's certainly where the Mets could make an addition that would not cost them a ton of money, but that I believe would give a lot of needed stability to a part of the club that I think really was their downfall in 2019.
How soon will Steve Cohen's money be out there? I mean, that's really what I want to know as a Mets fan.
It's an excellent question. And to me, that is the type of transformative piece for the Mets that could really change the way they look on the long-term deals. So his deal, in other words, Steve Cohen's influence could have a big effect on the club if they were pursuing a Gerrit Cole, which they're not. It would be more of those longer-term deals that make a lot of sense for them. I don't see that type of transformative player now, but if we're talking a year from now and they have a bit more of an appetite to spend and that long-term deal is going to start to move into that 4 or 5 year horizon where we expect the transition to be done by, I think that's when Steve Cohen's influence could really have a pretty powerful impact on the Mets' ability to spend, which frankly is good for the Mets, their fans, and good for baseball.
Yeah.
I want to see this franchise be able to spend with the Yankees in the future and make for even more robust baseball discussion on your show, certainly among other places as well.
And for Met fans actually being happy, like maybe they might sign Mookie Betts if Steve Cohen gets involved.
Very good point.
He's the guy. I mean, he's the guy who's a free agent at the end of next year.
That's the guy.
What sense do you get for what the Red Sox plan is? Are they close to moving him during this offseason? Where are they at with him?
No, they're not. And I would say from my conversations here at the meetings, of the three big trade candidates, Bryant, Betts, and Lindor, I think Bryant is the most likely to be moved, followed by Lindor, followed by Betts.
Wow.
I think Betts, with a one-year scenario at that price point, there are a lot of teams that are scared of just how much money he'll make in arbitration to begin with, setting aside the fact that Red Sox would have to get some serious value back to just make that trade at all. So right now, guys, I look at it and think it's hard for me to imagine the Red Sox getting anything approaching fair value for a player of his caliber, especially given how much money that his new team would have to pay him just for 1 year.
Well,
so I think Mookie stays put, but then, as you say, that's a great call a year from now. I hope that at the winter meetings right now, you know, think about a year out, that we're talking about the Mets pursuing Mookie Betts with a legitimate chance to sign him to a 9 or a 10 year contract.
Oh, it'd be a beautiful thing. The Bryant thing is fascinating because there's this arbitration that's going to take place on if he has 1 year of time left or 2 years of time left based on the grievance that he filed from when they initially called him up. Isn't that a tough way to make a trade for a guy, not knowing when he's going to be a free agent?
It is, and it's a great point. He cannot be dealt until that grievance is resolved. Now, Theo Epstein made some comments last night here to the effect that he hopes to have an outcome in the next couple of weeks and that they feel pretty confident as to what that outcome is going to be. That's good from the Cubs' perspective, and actually from the overall market, it's all right as well, because it should probably take another week or two before we know where Josh Donaldson signs, where we know where Anthony Rendon signs. And I have a hard time thinking that in any case Bryant is going to be moved before those two things occur. So I would say that we'll wait as an industry for the Rendon decision, for the Donaldson decision, and then the Bryant trade will follow probably after that, once we know what his amount of control is left beyond this year, which all, again, should happen right around the same time. And from that standpoint, I would wait for a Bryant trade probably in the early days of the new year, if not right before then.
Talking to John Morosi, talking baseball with him. All right, Madison Bumgarner, where do you see him? What happens to him?
Well, Bumgarner's fascinating because he is basically only 10 months older than Zach Wheeler. He has had, objectively, a much better career than Zach Wheeler. And yet, there is still some doubt in the industry as to whether or not he's going to get what Zach Wheeler's contract was, which I think just speaks to the way that players are evaluated nowadays and the very discerning approach that teams are taking, especially to pitchers that have a big workload on their arm, which Bumgarner does. That being said, he took the ball every single start. He was tied for the league lead in starts this year with 34. So he had a healthy year. He exceeded 200 innings. I believe Bumgarner is someone who deserves a five-year deal in the range of $100 million. I think the Twins are one team that like him. He would do a lot, I think, to bring some playoff cred to a team that's had a hard time just winning games in the playoffs here in recent years. They're a club, I believe, the Twins, that have to find a way to add a major A-level starting pitcher. The Blue Jays do as well. I don't see him being a great fit for Toronto. The Braves are still probably the team that he wants to pitch for the most. Of course, he's from North Carolina. I would say that the Braves, White Sox, Twins, I would pay the most attention to with Bumgarner. Maybe the Reds, if they want to try to build the super rotation. Of course, they've already got a great 1-2-3 combo there with Castillo and Gray and Bauer. But you bring in Bumgarner, it really makes them a potential division champion, a contender. So I think Bumgarner's market is maybe not quite to the dollars that he wants, but I do expect a nine-figure deal for him is attainable and, frankly, something he also deserves right now.
And it's safe to say that Josh Donaldson will play in the National League East next year, because it looks like three of the five teams are interested. The Braves bringing him back, the Phillies, and maybe the Nationals to replace Rendon. So is that fair to say Donaldson will torture the Mets in the NL East next year?
Of course. They all
probably the most likely result, although we have heard Texas being involved as well. I think Texas, they want to have a big-time free agent acquisition, whether it's Rendon, whether it's Donaldson, of course, going into their new ballpark, both are legitimate possibilities. And so I would say that that's the one non-NL East option. But I do think heavy interest in Donaldson now from the NL East. That's a great call about what he could potentially do against the Mets once again. And that's honestly where I think the Mets overall, they're not in a bad place as a franchise. They're really not. I think that they're in a decent place. They're not in a great place. They're not in a bad place. They're sort of in the middle. But it has a chance to look worse than actually maybe it deserves to look, simply because their division is that competitive. That being said, that's what they have to deal with. They've got to deal with these really competitive teams right now. And so I would think it's going to take that big dramatic infusion at some point in time for the Mets to really jump back into that upper echelon of the division, and that may well be Mookie Betts a year from now.
Yeah, that's Steve Cohen. That's the key.
The key is
Steve Cohen.
He's one of the biggest offseason moves of any. He's not going to be on any transaction log here at the winter meetings, but certainly one of the biggest moves we have seen in baseball in a very, very long time.
He can't get that money out there fast enough.
Well, when they,
let me tell you.
When they agree to a deal, when the Wilpons and the whole family, Katz and Cohen agree to a deal, what's the timetable before baseball approves it? I assume they would. He's already a minority owner. So what kind of timetable are we looking at? Because obviously we want it done tomorrow.
It's a great question. And, of course, the owners typically handle those things once all the financing is in place and has been evaluated by their the various procedures that are put in place to ensure the integrity of all sales. Those are reviewed and then approved by the ownership group at large, which, of course, happens the ownership body, by meaning all 30 clubs, ownership level, at the owners' meetings, which take place three times a year. So the next one, I believe, would be in the early portion of the season, probably May, I believe. So it would still be a little bit of time before we see the next one happen, but it certainly could happen within the next 6 months, where it could be approved. But again, that assumes that the transition is desired to happen that quickly. That they, of course, announced that 5-year horizon, which sort of gives them plenty of runway to make this deal. But if they decide they want to have it in place by next off season, we could certainly then see that type of transition be announced here in the next 6 months or so at the next one or two, three times a year owner meetings.
Interesting. One more guy I'm going to throw at you, Dellin Betances.
Yes. I've heard very little about him in general in terms of him getting close to any sort of deal. Of course, he basically had a lost year due to injury this past year. But I would say teams that we know need bullpen help, Angels, Oakland certainly needs a lot of bullpen help.
The Mets?
And I would say the Mets, they're a team that for the right price and the right kind of a make-good deal, I could see that being a really, really good fit. Certainly, medical records are going to be scrutinized very, very thoroughly. But when you consider his familiarity with New York, both throughout his life and certainly as a professional pitcher for the Yankees, I could see the Mets and Betances being a great marriage. And I think that's probably one of the top three or four possibilities for Betances here in the days to come.
Will we get a cold decision by the end of the week? Is it going to move that quickly?
I believe so. I think that there's a very good chance that, that Cole will make a decision. I think that the right teams are involved. We know simply how seriously the interest has reached in terms of the level, and I believe that those three teams, Dodgers, Angels, Yankees, that they will be the three finalists, and I'd be stunned if he would sign anybody else. And I think that at this point in time, we could see an agreement here before the MLB meetings conclude here in San Diego.
Beautiful.
Interesting.
Thank you, John. Always good talking
John,
to you.
My pleasure, guys. It was great having the conversation. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you.
John Morosi, MLB Network, and Fox. Very different than last year. Last year, we're waiting into February and March for guys to sign.
It's almost like the edict came down that you got to sign guys earlier this year. I wonder sometimes.
Or maybe Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, we were just all overrating.
Maybe.
And executives were not as enamored with those guys as maybe
right.
We were.
Maybe you're right.
It'd be as simple as that. I don't know. Mookie Betts next year is going to be a free agent. We'll see how quickly that moves.
Yeah,
I hope Steve Cohen
drops
the cash right on his doorstep.
Oh, my God. He should be, like, waiting. He should be, like, as soon as the free agency starts, where's Mookie live? Here.
At his
door. I got
door.
A suitcase.
Yes.
You know?
Open
it's
it
like
up.
The old days.
Just like tons
of
cash.
It's like the Corleones. Yeah, I got the suitcase. I got it with me.
Oh, what a beautiful thing. What a great thing to fantasize about.
Man, right. Ernie says need a few suitcases. Well, no problem.
That's right.
Got plenty of guys that can bring a suitcase with
them. That's right.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.